Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
It took millions of people. It took people working behind the scenes, people protesting on the streets for days and weeks and months and years. And we achieved it.
WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is a free man, home in Australia. Assange landed in the Australian capital of Canberra on a charter jet from Saipan, where a U.S. district court judge sentenced him to time served after he pled guilty to a single felony count of illegally obtaining and disclosing national security material. We'll play excerpts of the news conference with his wife, Stella, and his lawyers, and get response from London, from Canberra, and here in New York. Then, at least 22 people have been killed in Kenya as police opened fire Tuesday on a growing protest movement against a bill to raise taxes.
What the government did to deploy a lot of force on us, it wasn't good. Yeah, we are not happy about it because they killed our colleagues and fellow youths. It's not okay. It's very bad. We are demonstrating peacefully. It's our right to demonstrate.
Human rights groups say more than 20 people at the youth-led protests have disappeared since Monday. We'll go to Nairobi for the latest. Among those we'll speak to, President Obama's half-sister, Alma Obama, who was tear-gassed at yesterday's protests. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has returned to his home country of Australia, a free man, following a plea agreement with the U.S. government. Assange landed in the Australian capital, Canberra, today to cheers from supporters. His arrival caps a more than 12-year legal ordeal after Assange published classified documents detailing U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. Press freedom groups have denounced successive U.S. administrations for targeting Assange, who faced 175 years in a U.S. prison if he'd been extradited and convicted on espionage and hacking charges. On Tuesday, Julian Assange flew from London to the Pacific Island nation of Saipan in the Northern Mariana Islands, where he's pled guilty in a U.S. district court to a single felony count of illegally obtaining and disclosing national security material. He was granted credit for time served during his imprisonment at London's Belmarsh prison and allowed to walk free. This is Assange's lawyer, Barry Pollack.
The court today determined that no harm was caused by Mr. Assange's publications. We know that they were newsworthy. We know that they were quoted by every major media outlet on the planet. And we know that they revealed important information. That is called journalism. The United States prosecuted that. They exposed Mr. Assange to 175 years in prison. That is what has a chilling effect. Today, a decision that it's time for Mr. Assange to go home, that doesn't have a chilling effect. The chilling effect is the United States pursuing journalism as a crime. I hope this is the first and last time that ever occurs.
We'll have more on the historic release of Julian Assange. We'll hear from Stella, his wife, his attorneys, and people from Canberra to Britain to New York after headlines. In Gaza, an Israeli airstrike on a residential building in Beit Lahia has killed at least 15 people, with others feared trapped under the rubble. Dozens more were injured in the assault. Elsewhere, more than a dozen Palestinians were rescued with injuries after an Israeli assault on Gaza City's Daraj neighborhood. Meanwhile, a new report by a UN partner agency finds 500,000 people in the Gaza Strip face catastrophic levels of acute food insecurity, putting them at risk of severe malnutrition and death. The report found nearly all of Gaza's 2.3 million people are experiencing acute hunger. Máximo Toledo is chief economist at the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization.
The latest data show that on a regular basis, more than half of the population does not have any food to eat in the house, and over 20% going entire days and nights without eating.
Members of the medical aid charity Doctors Without Borders have strongly condemned the killing of their colleague Fadia Awadia, a 33-year-old physiotherapist. Awadia was killed along with five other people, including three children, as he was riding his bicycle to work. His killing came as the United Nations warned it'll be forced to suspend aid operations across Gaza unless urgent steps are taken to protect humanitarian workers. Meanwhile, a major new investigation carried out by dozens of journalists with the nonprofit Forbidden Stories has revealed at least 18 media workers were likely killed or wounded by precision strikes launched from Israeli drones in violation of the laws of war. At least four were wearing press vests at the time and were identifiable as journalists. The Committee to Protect Journalists reports at least 108 media workers are among the more than 37,600 Palestinians killed by Israel's war on Gaza since October 7th, making it the deadliest conflict for journalists that the Committee to Protect Journalists has ever recorded. In Kenya, at least 22 people have been killed and dozens more injured as nationwide protests intensify against a highly unpopular tax hike. Kenyan lawmakers approved the bill Tuesday as police fired live rounds, rubber bullets and tear gas at thousands of protesters who stormed Kenya's parliament in Nairobi, angered by the measure, which would skyrocket the cost of goods and services in Kenya to help pay off billions in foreign debt, including to the International Monetary Fund and World Bank. Demonstrations also continued in other parts of Kenya. These are protesters in the coastal city of Mombasa.
The taxes are so high. We are being taxed our salary, and any other thing that you are going to buy with the little that you are remaining with is also taxed. So I think let us just demonstrate. We don't want it to be amended. We want it to be rejected in totality. And let us just kill the snake before it lays eggs.
We are fighting for ourselves because our future is in our own hands. If at all we let them direct us on how we're going to direct in this country, it's going to be war unto us, and we're not going to let that happen. And that is why today in Mombasa we have showed up in big numbers. We're not scared. We're going to show up today, tomorrow, and even the next day.
We'll have more on Kenya later in the broadcast. We'll go to Nairobi to speak with, among others, President Barack Obama's half-sister, Alma Obama, who was tear-gassed yesterday by Kenyan police. This comes as 400 Kenyan soldiers arrived in Haiti Tuesday. It's the first contingent of U.S.-backed troops sent to combat worsening gang violence in Haiti. Many Haitians have opposed the mission, saying past international interventions have contributed to political destabilization and humanitarian crises in Haiti. Here in New York, Westchester County Executive George Latimer has defeated Progressive Congressmember Jamal Bowman following the most expensive primary race in U.S. history. Latimer was encouraged to launch his primary challenge for New York's 16th Congressional District by the Democratic Majority for Israel Political Action Committee after Bowman repeatedly called for a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip and accused Israel of genocide. Outside spending in the race topped $23 million, much of it from pro-Israel groups like AIPAC. Other supporters of Latimer included Onward Together, Hillary Clinton's PAC, and Nelson Peltz, a Republican billionaire who's backing Donald Trump for the presidency. Jamal Bowman spoke to supporters after his primary defeat Tuesday night.
This movement has always been about justice. It has always been about humanity. It has always been about equality. And it has always been about our collective liberation.
In Colorado, far-right Republican Congressmember Lauren Boebert has won the Republican primary race for the 4th congressional district. Boebert moved to a more solidly Republican district after she narrowly won re-election to represent Colorado's 3rd district in 2022. Lauren Boebert is a far-right Trump supporter, an election denier, and infamously vowed to carry her Glock pistol on the Capitol grounds. The International Criminal Court has issued arrest warrants for 2 Russian officials accused of orchestrating missile strikes on Ukrainian electric power plants, which is a war crime. The ICC warrants against former Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu and Military General Valery Gerasimov were welcomed by U.S. officials. Neither Russia nor Ukraine nor the United States is a party to the Rome Statute, which established the ICC. The Biden administration's attempted to discredit the court's jurisdiction as it's seeking arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Defense Minister Yoav Gallant for possible war crimes committed in Gaza. Gallant met with Secretary of State Antony Blinken in Washington, D.C. this week and posed for photos together. And in Russia, a closed-door trial is underway in the city of Yekaterinburg for U.S. citizen Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich. Russian prosecutors accuse him of collecting secret information about a military factory for the CIA, charges the Wall Street Journal calls baseless. Earlier today, Gershkovich made an appearance in a glass cage inside a Russian courtroom. His head was shaved. He appeared calm as he briefly smiled and nodded at supporters. Stuart Wilson, the U.S. Consul General at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow, said Russian officials have not provided consular access to Gershkovich.
Have you managed to visit Evan?
Here?
Yeah.
No, we have not.
Are you going to? Is it allowed? I don't know.
Oh, we put in a request.
If convicted on espionage charges, Gershkovich faces up to 20 years in a Russian penal colony. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is home in Australia, a free man. Assange landed in the Australian capital of Canberra today to cheers from supporters. He disembarked from a charter jet and waved to the crowd before kissing his wife, Stella, and lifting her off the ground. He embraced his father, John Shipton, and entered the terminal building with his legal team. Assange's arrival in Australia ends a more than 12-year legal ordeal after he published classified documents detailing U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. Press freedom groups have denounced successive U.S. administrations for targeting Assange, who'd been facing 175 years in U.S. prison if he'd been extradited and convicted. 12 years ago this month, Assange entered the Ecuadorian embassy where he was given political asylum. He spent 7 years there. He has spent the last 5 years locked up in the harsh Belmarsh prison in London. Earlier today, Julian Assange flew from London to the Pacific island of Saipan in Northern Mariana Islands, where he entered a U.S. district court and pled guilty to a single felony count of illegally obtaining and disclosing national security material. The judge, Ramona Manglona, sentenced him to the 5 years he'd already spent behind bars, saying, quote, "You will be able to walk out of this courtroom a free man. I hope there will be some peace restored," she said. Just moments before this broadcast, Julian Assange's wife, Stella, and his lawyers, Barry Pollack and Jen Robinson, held a news conference in Canberra. This is Stella Morris Assange.
I wish to thank the Prime Minister, Albanese, the officials who have been working in DFAT on securing Julian's release. I'd also like to thank the Australian people who have made this possible, because without their support, there would not be the political space to be able to achieve Julian's freedom. And that support is across the board. I thank the opposition for also supporting Julian's release. It took all of them. It took millions of people. It took people working behind the scenes, people protesting on the streets for days and weeks and months and years. And we achieved it. Julian wanted me to sincerely thank everyone. He wanted to be here. But you have to understand what he's been through. He needs time. He needs to recuperate. And this is a process. I ask you, please, to give us space, to give us privacy, to find our place, to let our family be a family before he can speak again at a time of his choosing. I think it's important to recognize that Julian's release and the breakthrough in the negotiations came at a time when there had been a breakthrough in the legal case in the UK, in the extradition, where the High Court had allowed permission to appeal. There was a court date set for the 9th and 10th of July, an upcoming court date in which Julian would be able to raise the First Amendment argument at the High Court. And it is in this context that things finally started to move. I think it revealed how uncomfortable the United States government is, in fact, of having these arguments aired. Because this case, the fact is that this case is an attack on journalism, it's an attack on the public's right to know, and it should never have been brought. Julian should never have spent a single day in prison. But today we celebrate, because today Julian is free.
Julian Assange's U.S. lawyer, Barry Pollack, also addressed reporters in the Australian capital of Canberra and spoke about the details of the case.
Good evening. Earlier today in a courthouse in Saipan, we had a hearing that brought to a close a prosecution that never should have been brought. Julian Assange has, for so many years, sacrificed for freedom of speech and freedom of the press. He's sacrificed his own freedom. And finally, today, that tragic situation ended, and we are all grateful that Julian is back home in Australia, where he belongs, back with Stella, back with his children, reunited with his father. It is unprecedented in the United States to use the Espionage Act to criminally prosecute a journalist or a publisher. It's in the more than 100-year history of that law, it has never been used in this fashion. It is certainly our hope that it will never be used in this fashion. Julian spent years in Belmarsh. No one should spend a day in prison for giving the public newsworthy and important information, in this case, information that the United States government had committed war crimes, that there were civilian casualties exponentially greater than the United States government had admitted in Iraq and Afghanistan. It was definitely in the public's interest to have this information, and Julian provided it to the public. He performed a tremendous public service, not a crime. The problem with the Espionage Act is there is no First Amendment defense in the Espionage Act. It does, by its terms, not matter the reason why you publish. The U.S., for years, the U.S. government has claimed that these publications did great harm. Today in court, the United States government admitted that there is not a single person anywhere that they can produce that was actually harmed by these publications. Hopefully this is the end, not just of the case against Julian Assange, but the end of the case against journalism. Thank you.
That was Barry Pollack, Assange's attorney. His longtime attorney, Jennifer Robinson, then took questions from reporters along with Pollack and Stella Assange.
Stella, could you have a question?
Just got four questions.
That moment on the tarmac where you embraced Julian must have been incredibly surreal. Was that the moment you realized that this was over, that he was gone? Yes, I was overcome by emotion when I first heard that there were crowds cheering that I didn't even know were there behind a fence. Because
when I go down that he put lives at risk, for instance, and that his disclosures were not in the public interest.
Well, to start with, there's no evidence of any actual harm, and that's exactly what the U.S. government acknowledged in court today in Saipan. So there is no evidence that anyone was physically harmed as a result of those publications. The public interest in those publications is clear. Evidence of war crimes, that the U.S. had not disclosed the extent of civilian casualties in Iraq and Afghanistan, the use of torture and other forms of human rights abuse around the world. There is no denying the public interest in WikiLeaks publications, which is reflected in the reasons why WikiLeaks has won the Walkley Award for Most Outstanding Contribution to Journalism, the Sydney Peace Prize. The fact that Julian's been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize every year since those publications. So to suggest that this was not in the public interest, I don't understand the basis upon which they could possibly suggest that. And so I think this is clear.
Stella, can you have a question for you now?
Yes, I was overcome by emotion when I first heard that there were crowds cheering that I didn't even know were there behind a fence because it was dark. And then I heard them cheer more and more and flashes, and then I turned the corner, and then I saw that Julian was coming, and we embraced, and I mean, I think you've seen the pictures. I don't want to express in words what is obvious from the image.
Stella, what comes next for Julian Assange? Will this bring back alive?
Stop.
You can leave this here. You create a whole picture of what happened with what's next.
Julian needs time to recover. To get used to freedom. Someone told me yesterday who had been through something similar that freedom comes slowly. And I want Julian to have that space to rediscover freedom slowly and quickly.
Colleagues mentioned the Podesta files earlier. I think he may not have read them. Could you, now you have the opportunity, just remind us of how that actually reformed the DNC and the corruption within? The Podesta files were really good for the Democratic National Congress, yes?
Look, there was a huge... There's clearly public interest in the DNC materials that was released by WikiLeaks, and in terms of the legality of those publications, there's a US court decision showing that it had the highest possible protection of the First Amendment. So from a principal point of view, People might not like the politics of any particular publication, but that publication is absolutely protected by the First Amendment, as U.S. courts have found.
Are there any post-release conditions for Julian, prolonged periods? The U.S. have said that he's banned from returning to the U.S., gag orders, anything like that. And can you and Barry give us a sense of the negotiations with the DOJ, simply given Julian's strong-willed view that he was not guilty of the crime?
I think it's best Barry speaks to the terms of the plea deal.
There are absolutely no restrictions on Julian. The case against him is over. There is no gag order. There are no other restrictions. He is going to be able to go back to whatever life he chooses to build with Stella and his family. The negotiations were a protracted process that went on for several months, sort of in fits and starts. We were not close to any sort of a resolution until a few weeks ago when the Department of Justice reengaged, and there have been very intense negotiations over the last few weeks. One thing we were very clear about was that any resolution would have to end this matter, and that Julian would be free, that he was not going to do additional time in prison, he was not going to do time under supervision, he was not going to do time under a gag order. So that was one absolute requirement. Another significant point of negotiation was where the plea would be taken. Julian did not want to come to the United States in any form. Ultimately, obviously, we negotiated Saipan under conditions where he would be released in the UK. He would come to Saipan not as a prisoner of the United States or of the United Kingdom, and that we would come in and leave on the same day, which is exactly what happened. Other provisions of the plea that were very significant, the United States agreed that they are not going to bring any other charges against Julian for any conduct, any publications, any news gathering, anything at all that occurred prior to the time of the plea. So even if he had prevailed in the extradition proceeding, that would have just resolved this case. This resolves any possible case that the United States could bring against Julian for any subject matter. So that was obviously very significant to us.
Thank you. Jen and also Stella. Stella, you called yesterday your hopes for a pardon to be granted to Julian. How do you see that playing out? Would you like the Australian government to support that call? What could be possibly done to actually achieve that outcome in your view?
Look, I think today we celebrate Julian's freedom. Today is the day that the plea deal was approved by the judge. I think it's also a day where I hope journalists and editors and publishers everywhere realize the danger of the of this U.S. case against Julian that criminalizes, that has secured a conviction for news gathering and publishing information that was in the public interest, that was true, that the public deserved to know. And that precedent now can and will be used in the future against the rest of the press. So it is in the interest of all of the press to seek for this current state of affairs to change through reform of the Espionage Act, through increased press
protections, and yes, eventually, when the time comes, not today, a pardon.
That was Stella Morris Assange, Julian Assange's wife. She is also a human rights attorney, along with Assange attorneys Barry Pollack and his longtime lawyer Jennifer Robinson, speaking at a news conference in the Australian capital of Canberra, just minutes after WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange arrived in Australia, a free man, after a 14-year legal ordeal. When we come back, we get response from Canberra in Australia and here in New York. Stay with us.